This is J.G. Hertzler, General Martok on Deep Space Nine, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Hello and welcome to Commentary, Trek Stars, a show which deals with the work of Star Trek creators outside of Star Trek. I'm Mike.
I'm John.
And today we are joined by Charlene from To the Journey.
To the Journey.
I walked all over that. I'm sorry, Char.
I was waiting for Max to chime in. To the Journey.
Yes, Max is currently in wedding mode by the time this comes out. Well, he'll almost be married, I guess. We'll see.
He'll be almost married.
Yeah. So
almost congratulate him.
No, Max this week, unfortunately. But what can you do? But we have Char. So what else
there
could
we go.
You want? So today we are starting a new series. This one on Kate Mulgrew and her performance as Captain Catherine Janeway on Star Trek Voyager and Red. I knew that. On Orange is the New Black.
Please tell me you've watched it.
I panicked for a second there because I haven't watched it.
No.
And I was totally going to watch it. And then I'm like, I'm not going to be in town. Oh, good. That's one less thing that I have to do this week.
Please promise me you will watch the show because it is fantastic. But I realize we're saving that for later.
I will definitely watch it. I will definitely watch it. I've been meaning to watch it. I want to watch it. It's just that time thing, you know?
Yes, that stupid time thing really gets in the way of stuff.
Yeah, it's kind of a pain in the ass. But today we're going to look at her work in Star Trek. As everyone knows, she was Catherine Janeway on Star Trek Voyager. And, I don't know if you guys remember pre-Voyager, sort of the lead up to the show. But there was a lot of talk about, what this new show was going to be and everything. And I remember hearing the rumblings. And it's weird because now, since it was pre-internet, I don't even know where I would have heard these rumblings,
TV Guide.
Well, they had
That's TV where I heard them.
Okay.
Well, there were plenty of magazines. There was Premier Magazine. Was Entertainment Weekly out by then?
Yes.
I think
yes,
so. And they were big on spoiling things.
I guess so. Starlog, probably.
Right.
Cinescape, yeah. I think, was probably... Yeah,
oh,
Cinescape
sure.
was out because I have the special Voyager issue.
Star Trek Communicator.
Star Trek Communicator, yeah. But I wonder how much they would say, since they're the official one, right?
Right. Yeah, they might have not delved into the rumor mill of all the behind-the-scenes stuff, but I remember they did so many previews on the show itself, the characters, the ship, the premise.
Yeah, yeah. And I do remember, people talking about stuff at conventions and everything leading up to it. But the big word on the street, the big thing which was going to sort of set this apart from all the other Star Trek shows, initially at least, was that the captain was going to be a woman. And that was quickly sort of like, not denied, but, downplayed by the powers that be, saying like, well, we are looking at women, but we're also looking at men. And, we're just going to find the best person for the job. And it's like, well, that's an interesting concept. But before I give my opinion on that, Char, what did you think about the idea of a female captain? Well, let's start with that. What did you think about the idea of a female captain?
I certainly thought back then, it would be due time. We've had all of these guys. It would be time for a lady. That made a lot of sense.
Yeah, I pretty much agree with that. What about you, John?
I don't think that I really thought too much about it, to be honest. And that's not to be flip. It was sort of one of those things where there's going to be a female captain. Okay, cool.
Right.
I sort of had the to me, it wasn't that big a deal. Like, my mom was a very, I never saw a distinction there of why that would be a big deal that a woman would be the captain of the ship. Like, that was never a thing in my brain.
Well, I do think that the whole female captain thing got way overblown and overpromoted. I think if we would have just kept that mentality of it's a lady, she's in the captain's seat, and that's it. I don't know. Was 1995 ready for that? Maybe that was the problem. Because I think today it wouldn't be as nearly as big of a thing, whether we had Janeway or not.
I mean, it's interesting because, like, I don't really, and maybe it was just because I was young and stupid or something like that, but, like, I don't really, I mean, it's like 20 years ago this week from when we're recording this, you know, it wasn't that long ago, it seems like, to me anyway, but as like a 14-year-old, I never really, you know, thought about that either as being like a significant thing, you know? Maybe I was not, privy to society's, you know, general sexism or anything like that. But I just, like, pretty much like what John was saying, I was just like, oh, well, okay, well, that just makes sense. Because why would, I mean, you know, out of four captains, of course, sooner or later, you got to get to a woman since they make up, like, over 50% of the population, right?
Yeah, why wouldn't there be a female captain? Right.
Right.
Well,
maybe it was not necessarily our generation who thought so much of it. I think it might have been more of the generation of the writers themselves, mm-hmm. where maybe they remember a little more about women's lib and went through civil rights and that whole sort of thing and the power struggle of women in the workplace. I think that was much more prevalent for them than it ever has been for us, because they paved the way for that.
Yeah. And I could see, you know, someone like Jerry Taylor saying, like, no, this has got to be a woman, you know, for sure, because, mm-hmm. you know, it's important. And it is important. I mean, looking at it, you know, now, I definitely do think that it's important, especially since we've had, another Star Trek series after that, and it wasn't a woman, you know. Rick Berman actually tweeted something on the anniversary of the show, which I thought was kind of interesting. He just said, 20 years ago, a woman captain walked onto the bridge. No mention of her gender. She was the captain, plain and simple. And that was it. I mean, I think that's kind of interesting that he would say that, because it seems like that was a conscious decision on their part, despite the fact that they said, like, well, you know, it could be a man. I mean, if a man's the right person for the job, why wouldn't it be a man? And am I right in thinking that some guys actually auditioned for the part?
Yes, so some really did. Yeah.
Huh. And
I didn't know that. How significant a sample of the actors who came into audition was it? Was it just like two or three as like safety choices, or?
You know, I'm not exactly sure of numbers, but I would say that there was a small group of men being considered. Largely from varying areas of descent. I think they had a Middle Eastern guy. Of course I'm blanking now. I can't remember the other candidates. But they probably had like two or three really solid leads that they were potentially going to go with if they didn't find the right female. They wanted to use a female. But if they didn't find the right person for the part who they thought could carry the series, then they were going to go with a male. And that's so hilarious given what happened. But we'll eventually get there.
Right.
It's very strange. I mean, it almost feels like network doing there or something like that. You know, like,
oh, yeah, it could have been.
Like, do you really think that a woman could be a captain on Star Trek? You know, like, could we really have a female lead on Star Trek? And it's like, well, or are we need to have a guy as a backup just in case we can't find the right woman. I mean, what does that even mean?
It's like you have no faith in any actress whatsoever out there in Hollywood then.
You know what? I'll throw out there, though, just to maybe give it too much of a benefit of the doubt thing. But maybe it was just because this show was supposed to launch the UPN network. It was Suits nervous. Like they were nervous that the audience was going to reject the idea of a female captain.
Certainly the Suits were very nervous about this thing. They were nervous for the whole first season, as a matter of fact. That's why they kept messing with Mulgrew's hair. I kid you not. That was one of the big reasons.
I totally believe you.
Like, they couldn't focus on the fact that she was there because that had already happened. That was locked. So let's focus on how she looks. As you do with a female, right? I mean, they didn't mess with Kirk's hair nearly as much as they did Kate Mulgrew's hair.
Point of
order. And William Shatner might have obsessed about his hair, yeah. But that's different.
Yeah. Okay, there you go. I was going to say, because the hairpiece was in place back then, even in the original series.
And now, granted, they did almost make Picard wear a toupee. They almost gave Patrick Stewart a toupee, and they luckily chose against that. But still, that was a very short conversation compared to what they did to poor Kate Mulgrew.
Fair point.
Yeah,
what is
it with captains and hair that just, I mean, there's something about that. That's got to be, because, you know, Sisko obviously has the whole thing, too, where they made him grow hair and shave his goatee. And then once he shaved his head and grew his goatee back, all of a sudden, I mean, they even say, like, it was like night and day. All of a sudden, he was just like, oh, I'm comfortable. I can do this.
But
you know,
what,
and you can see, like, a huge, like, leap in his performance, you know, after he changes his appearance.
And wasn't part of that, though, because they did the Spencer for Hire movie, and he couldn't, like, he had to have his look changed, and so they were like, all right, fine, come in like that. So, like, they bent or something? Anyway.
That might have been. I know, yeah. Like, he grew the goatee, like, on his break, and he's like, I can shave this if you want, but why not just let me keep it? And then I think afterwards he was like, come on, guys, just let me shave my head.
Yeah,
it's weird. I don't know. I don't understand. I don't understand that obsession, but it's bizarre. Now, I mean, I am 99.9% positive, just based on, you know, logic and whatnot, that Jerry Taylor was probably fighting the idea of a guy being in this role from day one, because for the reasons that we stated before, you know, obviously it is important to have a woman in that role. But also, you know, as a writer of things, which, you know, makes sense and whatnot, you can't just write a role and then just be like, oh, yeah, I'm changing the gender because whatever. It's like plug and play, you know?
Right.
Right.
I mean, that doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah. Well, and then the other thing is if you have a male captain, if you ultimately go with the male captain, then the dynamic of the rest of the cast had to change to balance out. And so they'd already had a lot of their cast set already, but there was a lot of anxiety about that, wondering, well, if they end up going with a male captain, some of us are out of here and we know it. We just don't know who, because they're going to rearrange things. And then could you imagine? Ugh, the uncertainty of that.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, I guess that's the business, but geez.
Yeah.
You know, that's tough and weird. It's still weird because, I mean, it's almost like you're crippled as a creator because you can't do anything to make the character gender specific. It's strange. I don't know. I don't understand that. That always, like, even as a 14-year-old, I'm like, this doesn't make any sense to me. Do these people really just have no idea what they're doing or what's going on here? You know?
I mean, I had a female cousin live with us while I was in high school, and she wound up going to the Naval Academy. So,
yeah.
I mean, by that point, it really was. I think Char, you're right that it was a bigger deal for people who were a little bit older who were writing and creating the show.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't realize that sort of the sea change had happened behind them by a couple of years.
Yeah. Oh, I think so. Yeah.
Or maybe, you know, people like Taylor did realize that, and they're like, it's time that, you know, we have representation here, and, you know, we shouldn't play this off like it's a big deal. And the network was like, whoa, 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 no, this is a big deal, you know? I'm just guessing.
That's possible, too. I mean, with as nervous as the UPN execs were about having a female captain, in a way, it's no wonder that it was so blown out of proportion in the media.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But, I mean, if you also think about it, I mean, looking back now, it really was important. It did have an impact, and many young girls went into STEM fields because of Captain Janeway.
Yeah.
So maybe it was blown out of proportion, but it did have a positive effect in the end. So does the end justify the means?
I mean, whatever it was, whatever the reasoning behind it or whatever, you know, I think that it was definitely needed and definitely a good choice to make, for sure. So, okay, let's look at Janeway as a character. John, what are your thoughts on the character of Janeway?
she's a good character. I mean, I didn't attach onto Voyager. We've talked about this on past episodes, but like at the time I was one of those people suffering Star Trek fatigue. And so when Voyager came out, it was just a victim of the fact that it's like, I'd kind of had enough Star Trek. I was like, okay, well, I'll see you every couple of years for a movie, but come on guys, let's keep this light. And I think that, going back and rewatching Voyager at times, I like the character. I think that they did some good things. And I think that, Janeway, I think that as the performances solidified, as they figured out who she was, and as Mulgrew figured out who she was, I think that the character really took shape and became an intriguing and a compelling character. I actually always think of the first episode you see her interacting with Da Vinci on the holodeck.
Mm.
That was really, even at the time, because, you know, I would check in on the show every so often, and I remember happening to check in on that show, on that episode, and watching it and saying, wow, hey, they've really figured her out. This is a really good character. I like this. But then, of course, you know, life gets in the way, and there was still the Star Trek fatigue.
Yeah. Well, Char, what about you?
Oh, I've always liked Janeway. Voyager, of course, people know my bias because I do the Voyager podcast on Trek FM. But Janeway was a character that I just kind of fell in love with very quickly, along with a lot of the other Voyager characters. And I think that's one of the big reasons why I watched the show from its very start to its very finish. And that's the one series of Star Trek that I've done that with. I think that at times she was very inconsistently written, but always very well acted and portrayed by Mulgrew. I feel like she did the very best she could with the material she was given. I wish the writers would have maybe been a little more fluent among themselves as far as the direction they wanted Janeway to go, because it seemed like any time that a new showrunner took the top spot, they went with their vision of Janeway and had very little to no regard for what had happened before, and didn't really seem to care too much about planning for the future. And so you have kind of different Janeways as you go through. And that's not Mulgrew's fault. That is the writer's fault, in my opinion. And a lot of people don't like Janeway because of that.
See, I think that that's somewhat annoying in the idea that people, human beings, aren't consistent. They're all different at different phases
that's
of their
true.
Life.
Yeah.
And so I don't understand why there is this insistence that the behavior of a character is consistent. And I'm doing air quotes on an audio show, so yay me. But I don't know why there's this insistence on a character being so consistent and having this consistent arc. I understand the rules of drama and character development and those sorts of things, but people are going to go through different phases. And I think that probably the disconnect is because it was obviously therefore a result of the writers not really knowing which way they wanted to go and changing directions. But it would be really interesting to see a creative team embrace the idea that a person is not going to be consistent, that they're going to have periods in their life or during the course of this show where their temper is shorter or where they're more analytical or more emotional overall. So, you know, just random thought there, I guess. But it's like that, you know, I don't know why we have that expectation that somebody out in the depths of space with no help is always going to be the same person, you know, 6 months later that they were 6 months ago.
I think the problem with that is that would have been absolutely fine if maybe we could understand a little bit more about where she was coming from and we could see a little more of it happen. It just seemed to snap from week to week. Think about Equinox. She flips her lid. We don't really see her do it quite in that fashion before or even since after that. And so it's this kind of aberration. And a lot of people say, oh, God, she's bipolar. Put her on some meds. I mean, that's an awful joke. Because for one thing, if you know someone who's bipolar, it's a very difficult disease. But I just feel like we could have really examined her inner workings and why she felt that way. But we didn't. We didn't get that. And so we just saw what was on the surface without going deeper. And as an audience, that's kind of unsatisfying.
Yeah, it's like if she was, well, I don't know if you would even call it inconsistent then, but if, you know, from week to week she did change and have different sort of perspectives on things or whatever, that would be okay to me, as long as there was like a reason behind it, you know, and a logical progression or whatever, a logical deviation. But if it really is just sort of a case of like new writers coming in and writing the character in a different way, unless they're, you know, it's a very conscious thing, like you see on like the X-Files or with, you know, Batman or something like that.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But on a show like Voyager, that might not work as well. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. The episodic nature of the show really kind of, you have to take that down so much, and it just really seems choppy when they do try to do it. One thing I do love about Janeway, though, I do have to say, is I do like the fact that she is flawed. She isn't perfect, and I know a lot of people give her a lot of grief because the writers did write her at times where she had to be right, you know, that whole thing in her command decisions. But she had a proneness to depression, for instance, and that's a very relatable thing. I mean, we kind of talked about this recently on To the Journey. We all have our ups and downs in life, and it's kind of nice to see our heroes struggle with the same kind of things. And so I find that sort of thing very identifiable with her, and I'm glad that they kind of went there with that.
Hmm. Yeah. And I mean, and that type of thing, the inconsistency, I mean, you see that a lot on like the original series. It's there in a huge way.
Yeah, that's
you
true.
Know? And I don't know, maybe, I mean, I guess I never really had that much of a problem with it in Voyager because I was never invested in the show enough to really notice it, you know, from a week-to-week basis. But, you know, I mean, if you were to hold Voyager up to original series, it would look like an extremely tight continuity
yeah.
in terms of the
true.
Characters and
it,
everything.
It had continuity.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, you got to give TOS a little bit of slack just because the time period was so incredibly different.
Sure, oh, yeah. yeah. Everything was done differently then, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, the character of Janeway, you know, because she did change so much over time, and even though I've seen all of it, I'm much more familiar with the early part of the show because that's when I was, like, really hardcore into it. Myself when it was on and everything like that. And so whenever I think about the characters on Voyager, I always kind of think about the beginning and where she was at the start of this journey and everything like that. And I kind of like, you know, how they set her character up and the idea of giving her like a fiance at home, you know, who she doesn't know whether or not she's ever going to see again. You know, that's kind of like a good little character trait, you know, for a story like this. And also, the thing that I really liked about her, in addition to like her personality and everything, like I just kind of liked the way that she was sort of presented, her attitude and her command style and that kind of thing, I thought was all really cool. But the thing that I thought was sort of coolest about the character is, unlike the other captains, which very much came from sort of a militaristic perspective, she was a scientist, you know?
Yeah.
She was basically a nerd, you know, that's pretty cool. Exactly, you know. And I kind of like the idea, especially since they always make such a big deal out of how Starfleet is, you know, like a much bigger thing than just the military. And while I understand that you need people in command who are good at commanding, it's also kind of cool to think like, well, yeah, but she comes from science and, you know, that's what we do. So she's a scientist. And I like that a lot.
On a science vessel.
Is that what Voyager was?
Yeah. Voyager is very much a scientific exploration vessel. It wasn't meant for big expedition in the Delta Quadrant. That's for sure. They were planning very short scale missions, 2-3 weeks at a time, and conducting experiments, charting, that sort of thing. Yeah.
The more you know. I had no idea. Anyway,
still,
that's cool.
It ended up way better than the Captain of the Grissom from Star Trek.
Oh,
Italy,
yes.
So.
Yeah, Captain Wusshead. Yeah. I actually have another name for him, but you'd have to change the rating on this podcast.
Family show, Shark. Come on.
So what about Mulgrew's portrayal of the Captain, Shark? I know that you're a big fan of Mulgrew because I remember when we were in Vegas, and the Mulgrew panel was coming up, you were like, hey, can you live tweet this one? Because I just want to focus. I just want to focus all my attention on Kate Mulgrew.
Yes. Yes, I just needed to stare at her for a good solid 45 minutes and realize she's real. Yes, and I really did say those things to you pretty much per diem right there. Yeah, I am a fan of Mulgrew's, and I became a fan of Kate Mulgrew via Janeway. I didn't really know of a whole lot of what she did before then. I didn't know her from Ryan's Hope or Mrs. Columbo or anything like that. I did realize after a fashion that I had watched Throw Mama from the Train with Billy Crystal and Danny DeVito, and she's in that, but I didn't realize it was her.
What?
When I caught that flick later, I'm like, oh, that's Captain Janeway. That's so cool. And then I immediately had to have that movie on video cassette. So, yeah, I kind of delved into her body of work as a result of watching her on Voyager. And I love the fact that she comes from a very solid theater background. I think that does show in her performance, and some people don't like that, but I do. It gives her a very specific kind of flair that I like out of Janeway. She's got some sass. And, yeah, I love me some Mulgrew.
What about you, John?
I'm just fixated on, I didn't realize she was in Throw Mama from the Train. So now I got to go back and rewatch that movie, because that has some of the best throwaway lines of any comedy of the time period, to be
honest
with you.
It's such a great, stupid, wonderful movie.
Yeah, it is in many, many ways.
It really is. But yeah, no, she plays Larry's ex-lover or ex-wife even.
I'm totally going to have to go back and rewatch that now.
You must.
So. All right. Well, I mean, honestly, it's a funny movie, so I don't mind. But in terms of Mulgrew, you know, not just as, you know, Janeway on Voyager, you know, I said earlier, you know, I think her performance definitely, you know, shaped the character and helped and all of that. When we were talking about looking at her work, I had forgotten that she was on Cheers for a very short stint. And anybody that's on Cheers is awesome. So obviously Kate Mulgrew is awesome. But I'll actually say that beyond her performances, when I saw her interviewed by Shatner in The Captains, that was the moment where my respect for her sort of exploded, because that segment of the documentary was really fascinating. And it really speaks to her that I think there was a lot of her in Janeway. I mean, any actor, there's going to be a lot of them in their performances, except I hope Daniel Day-Lewis, because that would be terrifying if there's Daniel Plainview somewhere inside him. But I'll say
he will drink your milkshake.
Yeah, he may have it. Go ahead, have it. But, you know, there were a lot of aspects of Janeway that I could see in her. And I guess in episodic television, there's no way to avoid that. And some of the complaints you hear about Shatner through the years, you can see where they line up with some of, you know, Kirk's personality traits and stuff like that. But I think that with her, she's such a very, I think it is her theater background. She has such a grounded way of connecting to an audience. I think that anybody that comes from that theater background, it has a really rooted way of performing that can reach out to an audience and connect, as opposed to somebody who does screen acting only, with a few rare instances.
It is different. It really is.
Yeah.
And she does draw you in. I mean, she has such a charismatic presence. Like, you just feel her once she enters the stage. The energy changes.
Yes. And I think that even though she took a few hits completely unfairly for her voice, I think that
as a
theater actor, I think that her voice, she knew how to use it as an acting tool in a very live theater sort of way. And that made it, even if you weren't a huge fan of the show, watching her perform drew you in, because you could close your eyes and still vibe on what she was saying.
Yeah. She's that good. That's why I've followed her career since.
Yeah. I mean, her stage presence is definitely, you know, really strong. I mean, at that convention that we were at, you know, they made what seemed like a very odd decision to pair Mulgrew with Shatner and put the two of them on stage together. And it was one of those things where I'm like, this is a bad idea. This is just not going to go well because Shatner is just going to overshadow Mulgrew. And Shatner's at every convention. And, you know, Mulgrew's not going to get her time to shine. And Mulgrew basically got up there and not only held her own, but really sort of dominated Shatner at his own game, which was very, very crazy to see. And I think they realized what was going on, the convention people, because in Chicago, like the next year, the two of them were there again, and they put them on stage together again. I'm like, they knew that they struck gold, and they wanted to, you know, use that to their advantage again. And it totally works because she does have that great presence. She's not going to let anyone get the better of her, you know?
Mm-hmm. Oh, hell no.
And yeah. I think that's a really cool characteristic to bring to this character, you know? And I think that her performance is really good. I mean, the way that she, I mean, we'll talk about this, you know, in a little bit, I guess, but the way that she kind of stepped into the role and just sort of made it her own instantaneously is really impressive. I mean, something that my wife always says is, you know, like, out of all the captains, she feels that Mulgrew is the best performer. The only problem is that the character wasn't written nearly as well as the other captains, you know, in her opinion. And I think that there's something to that. I mean, she's not as good as Shatner. No one's as good as Shatner. Shatner's the best, right?
But she's Mulgrew.
She's Mulgrew. Yeah. She's a close second, you know, which is saying a lot because everyone's a close.
Opinions.
Daniel Day-Lewis is a close second to William Shatner, you know.
Well, Shatner's in his own league, but Mulgrew definitely has that take charge attitude, which translated so incredibly well to Voyager. I think a lot of that, she would say it has to do with her upbringing. She was one of nine kids, the oldest female, and really had to kind of help her mother keep things running smoothly in the house. So I think being bossy kind of comes naturally to her.
Yeah. Yeah, you can see that. You can see that, and she's really good at it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pays off.
So as everyone, I'm sure, knows, we almost didn't get Kate Mulgrew on Star Trek Voyager. We originally had, is an Academy Award winning actress, or was she just nominated? Geneviève Bujold, who, obviously very acclaimed, obviously very good at her craft, and yet maybe not the right fit for Voyager. Now, I remember when she was cast, I remember reading about this woman because I remember my aunt, who was sort of like the resident Star Trek fan and the resident movie fan in my family. My aunt is kind of very much responsible for guiding me in a certain direction in my life. And, you know, you're reading off the names of these cast members, and obviously most of them are people that no one's ever heard of. And then they say, oh, the captain's going to be Geneviève Bujold. And my aunt is like, oh, yeah, from Anne of a Thousand Days or whatever it was. You know, yeah, oh, yeah, she's a really good actress. And then they said that she was being replaced by this other woman. And my aunt was like, oh, yeah, Mrs. Columbo. Oh, yeah, she's a really good actress, too. You know, but it was just one of those things where it's so weird. I mean, it is something that happens. It happens a lot with pilots where people are recast, you know, and they reshoot, you know, certain scenes in the pilot and then have the right performer going forward or whatever in their estimation. But it was never really something that had happened in Star Trek, at least since the original series, which did it in kind of its own weird way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So when this happened, and as someone who didn't at the time, you know, as a 14-year-old kid, know anything about how these things worked, I was like, what? Oh, whoa, scandal. What's going on here? This woman must be really bad. What's going on? And that's just kind of how it was left until the DVDs came out in, what was it, the early aughts? It had to be the early aughts.
I hate it when you say that. It makes me feel so ancient. Back in the early aughts, we didn't even have Wi-Fi back then.
What do you want me to say? Nothing sounds as cool as the early aughts, right?
No comment.
Okay. All right. All right. So when the DVDs were released back in the early aughts, someone, you got to give these DVD producers credit and Paramount credit for actually letting this stuff happen, but because it happened multiple times on multiple releases with these things, but letting stuff out of their archives, which you would never think you would ever see in a million years. And one of the absolute biggest instances of that, maybe the biggest of all of them, came on that season one Voyager disc when they had a couple of scenes of Genevieve Bujold as Captain Janeway. And wow. I mean, just
that's
wow.
One way to put it. Yeah, your inarticulate expression of disbelief. As Tuvok would say.
Yeah.
Just to clarify one thing, steer back for one moment. Genevieve Bujold won a Golden Globe, was nominated for an Academy Award.
Okay. All right. For Anne of a Thousand Days?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
I would argue she'll only ever be known as the woman who was almost Janeway. I don't think anybody's going to remember anything else.
Aside from my aunt, you know.
Yeah. Maybe people who really were into, you know, 1970s movies and whatnot when she was really big or really know their Canadian actresses. I honestly don't remember a whole lot about the controversy because I had no idea who Genevieve Bujold was. And so when she left the show, I thought, oh, man, she must be a horrible actress, not knowing anything at all about her. And then later on, seeing those videos or the scenes that she did shoot, boy, am I glad she bowed out. Man.
Yeah, it was not a good fit.
Not at all. I mean, they were clearly after the name and the resume, because she was probably the biggest name that they had auditioning, but boy, they really screwed that up.
Yeah. Hmm. And luckily they fixed it, you know?
Yes.
I mean, that was really good. At least they weren't just like, we're committed, you know? Because, I mean, can you imagine what Voyager would have been like with her instead of Mulgrew?
Dead.
It would have been a completely different series.
It would have been dead after season one. You know it would have.
Would it have been Enterprise before Enterprise, where fans jumped ship and just revolted? I mean, you know, I'm not bashing on Enterprise, trust me.
Yeah.
But, you know, it wasn't what people expected, and people jumped ship from Star Trek at that point. They just did. And is it possible that if she had been Janeway, people would have just punched out, would have just been like, nah, you're not even trying. You know, like,
yeah,
I think there's
awful.
An argument for that. Yeah.
And I couldn't see her growing into the role either.
No, she looked very uncomfortable the whole time. Yeah.
I don't think that would have changed.
Yeah.
So it was very good of her to bow out, actually, and realize that she'd walked into something that she just could not handle.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I remember the rumor mill back then was that there was some, that there was a straw that broke the camel's back was that some costumer made some sort of inappropriate remark about how they had to amplify her chest in the costume or something like that. That was the rumor at the time. I remember that. I remember reading that article that she heard the costumer say that. And like she, you know, that was the moment where she was like, I'm done with this and I'm out. Like, cause yeah, I mean the rumor mill was, you know, we might get it faster now on the internet, but you know, there was a fair amount of rumor mill stuff back then about it, about what caused her to go.
Okay. I never heard that one.
Yeah.
And who knows for sure? Who knows if she left or if they said, you know what? No. Or what? You know, I mean, who knows? You know, I mean, those things. I mean, it was for years the party line on Gates McFadden leaving, you know, Next Generation was like, oh, she had to go shoot Hunt for Red October, which I don't know if you guys have seen Hunt for Red October.
Yeah, she's in it for like
two
seconds.
She's in two scenes
yeah.
at the beginning. One where she's like, don't forget to take the dry cleaning to this place. And then in another scene where she's like literally in a car as Alec Baldwin gets out of the car.
Yep.
And it's like, no. And then like on that big interview session that Rick Berman did with the Academy of Television or whatever it is, I know that we've talked about this before. Have you guys seen it or anything?
No, I don't think I have.
It's awesome. Basically, for like the whatever anniversary of whatever, like the Television Society of Television People or whatever, decided to like interview people who were responsible for television history. And let them tell their basically their life stories from working in television. And they put them all up on YouTube where it's just like an uncut thing. Like the Rick Berman one, it's 3 hours long. Just Rick Berman talking to someone. They go through his entire career, basically the entire history of Next Gen era Star Trek. And since he did this like just a couple of years ago, he doesn't have to worry about, you know, protecting the whatever. So he just says everything, just says it all. It is so good. And in there, he talks about, you know, Gates McFadden. And they're like, what happened? Why was she gone in season two? And they're like, we fired her. You know, we did this because the guy who was running the show didn't like her and blah, blah, blah. And we fired her. So and then we fired him. And then it's like, well, we could hire another captain or another doctor, or we can just bring her back. And it's like that is not what they had been saying for like the past 25 years or whatever it is. And, you know, so I'm wondering, who knows what the official story and the reality of the Geneviève Bujold situation are. Sure. But we may never know.
Yeah, PR is a powerful, powerful thing.
Yep.
It's an evil thing.
But yes, luckily we have Mulgrew and all is right in the world.
Thank goodness.
And the Delta Quadrant.
Yes. So.
All right. Well, any final thoughts on Mulgrew's performance in Star Trek? What about you, Char?
You know, I don't know if I would be the same Star Trek fan had Kate Mulgrew not taken the helm of the USS Voyager. I have a lot to thank for that. For one thing, for continuing my strength as a Star Trek fan, keeping it going. But then also, just with Mulgrew in general, I've really come to respect her both as a person and as an actress. And I love just how incredibly articulate she is, how classy she is. She's just a really elegant, awesome, incredible human being. And she does bring that to Janeway, too. And so I thank her for that.
What about you, John?
How can I follow that? Honestly.
You can. Come on.
Yeah. Ditto. Yay. That's what I have to say. Well put.
Thanks.
Yeah. I don't have anything to disagree. I mean, she is. She's a very strong actress and a seemingly great person. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you guys. You know, I mean, she is really good. I think, you know, seeing that, I mean, if anyone wants to sort of see what it is that an actor brings to a role, I mean, just look at, because those scenes are done like almost the same, word for word, shot for shot, and seeing a different actress in that role and then seeing, you know, her come in at the last minute with basically zero prep and just nail it, you know?
Yeah.
It's like night and day.
It really is. Go on YouTube. You don't even need the DVDs.
Yeah. So, yeah, go check it out. It's very, very insightful.
Yeah. So.
It's eye-opening if you've never watched it, that's for sure.
Acting's always a lot harder than people think it is.
Definitely. Yeah. And she's good at it. So, well, next week I will not be here, and Max will not be here, but John and Charlene will be here. So
yay!
We're going to
wreck
the joint.
They will be talking about Orange is the New Black and Kate Mulgrew's performance on that show. I, for one, am looking forward to listening to that. But yeah, before we go, we asked for people to send us some voicemails a couple months ago. I think it was in response to finding out that To the Journey received a voicemail. And we were like, hey, man, what's going on? How come we don't get any voicemails? And we hadn't gotten any. And that sort of seemed to continue for a couple months. And then someone alerted us to the fact that we actually did receive a voicemail, a few of them, just a few, well, I guess a couple months ago at this point. So we figured we should finally play them. This first one is from Gene. And here it is.
Hey, this message is for Commentary : Trek Stars. I just wanted to chime in on your Voyager discussion from your Jerry Taylor show. I learned from Max that just because I like something does not mean that it is good. And it's funny because I fully recognize that there are lots of problems with Voyager, but I have to say, I love it. And for whatever reason, I came to the game late with Voyager, and by the time I watched it, I was more a peer with, you know, the characters in the show than, say, a Next Generation, where they were more of like a mentor or, you know, like a role model type figure for me. And I don't know why, but I just loved tuning in and hanging out with my friends. You know, I loved hanging out with Tom and Harry and even Bilana, and I loved going on adventures with Chakotay and crashing shuttlecraft and things like that. And I just, it was great. I mean, I guess this is pretty obvious. You know, we wouldn't be talking about it if we didn't like it, despite its flaws. But I just thought I'd chime in and say, hey, I recognize there are lots of problems, but gosh darn it, I like it. So there's one voicemail message. Sorry, it's a little late. Thanks, guys.
Well, thank you, Gene. We really appreciate that.
Yeah.
I think that that's kind of interesting, an interesting take about on how, like, something can strike you differently depending on where you are in your life when you see it.
Oh, yeah.
And, I mean, that's one of the things which I've always found. It's one of the reasons why I've never, like, even though I'm not particularly fond of Voyager, although I do still like it, you know, I've never been, like, surprised. I totally understand why you and Tristan love it, because that was your Trek. That was, you know, it was the one that was on when you became a super fan. And that just makes sense, you know?
Yeah. And we were also coming of age, which I think was very important at the time.
Yeah.
So, you know, when you put a show in front of a young, impressionable teenager and the teenager sticks with it, well, there's a lot of memories that resonate still to this day.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. So after we hadn't received that email, I'm assuming a short time later, we received voicemail.
Yeah.
This one from Jiminy Jobob.
Jiminy
so
Jobob.
I'm going to play that now. The voice might sound a little bit familiar, but we shall see.
All right.
Hey, Commentary Trek Stars. I heard you was looking for some voicemails, so I decided to give you one. I like Star Trek, and I see it on my radio box. Some of my favorite episodes include Spectre of the Gun, North Star, A Fistful of Datas, Cowboys and Aliens, and Galaxy Quest. I hear your show's real good. Keep up the good work.
Man, I feel sorry for that poor kid. His voice is changing.
Well, yes. Thank you, Bob. We really appreciate the email or the voicemail.
Yeah.
If you're a fan of those episodes and Cowboys and Aliens, then I would recommend a show called Firefly. It'd probably be right up your alley.
It's better than Cowboys and Aliens. I guarantee you that.
Cowboys and Aliens. Yes. And also, I just have to say, I love the fact that at the end of all that, he threw in Galaxy Quest. Because everyone knows that Galaxy Quest is the best Star Trek movie, right?
Well, not if you listen to the latest episode of the 602 Club.
No, yeah, I know. Before that aired, I was like on Twitter, like messaging Matt Rushing, and I'm like, because he's like, I'm watching Galaxy Quest right now. I'm like, I hate how everyone says that. That's the best.
I do like the explanation that it is more of a homage than an actual Star Trek movie. I think that does more honor.
Yeah. It's not a Star Trek movie. That doesn't mean... I mean, I don't know. I think people who say that are like, you know, like trying to mean it as like a compliment. Like, yeah.
Yes.
And it's like, no, because, you know, most most movies, well, I'm not going to say most movies, but there's a lot of movies out there which are better than most Star Trek movies. So, you know, you're not doing Galaxy Quest a service by calling it the best Star Trek. But whatever.
Yeah. It's, yeah.
Yeah. I think people mean well, but they're wrong.
Yes.
Yes. I think it's possibly one of those things where, and this happens every so often, where it's one of those things where it was sort of a tongue-in-cheek comment that just snowballed and became conventional wisdom. And it's like, no. It was just a little joke.
Yeah, it was funny that one time. Let's stop now. Yeah. It's been 15 years. Please stop.
Yes.
Stop. Okay, well, since we didn't get that message either, we got a third message. This one from John Doe. each of these get progressively shorter.
How did he spell kind of Doe?
Interesting. But here's our final voicemail.
Hello, commentary, : Trek Stars. This is not the same person who left you the last two messages. Now you have three messages. Bye.
Right. Well done, sir.
Yes.
Thank you, John. We really appreciate it. Yes. And sorry that we didn't get to your voicemail sooner. We just didn't know how to check it. But, you know,
but we do
once
now.
We found out. We do now. Yes. So if anyone wants to send us a voicemail, let us know. Tell us what your favorite episodes of Star Trek are or why you like Voyager or whatever. And, we will respond.
And I do believe the official voicemail count now is commentary: Trek Stars 3 to the Journey 1. Just saying.
Yeah. All right. Yes. There you go.
You win this round, Trebek.
The game is mine.
Penis mightier. All right, I'll stop.
Well,
please do. Now I'm replaying every single one of those.
Me
Trebek.
Too. Me too.
Yeah, in my head.
I have no idea what you guys are talking
Wait
about.
Wait a minute. What? No.
What?
Come on. Okay.
Celebrity Jeopardy? SNL?
Seriously?
Sorry.
Dude.
I decided that, if I was going to start watching SNL, I'd need to start from the beginning and
No. You go on YouTube and you watch Celebrity Jeopardy tonight.
You do that now. Well, after we're done recording.
Okay. All right. Well, it's been fun talking about Kate Mulgrew on Voyager, but that's not the only thing we've been talking about here on Trek FM this week, so here's a taste of what you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
Because it's actually legitimately trying to say something.
Yes, it's very Star Trek. It may be the most Star Trek of all Star Trek.
Yeah, it's definitely what I would point to as being, this is what science fiction is about.
Earl Grey.
Kovac will tell us to experience Bij sometimes, in which case we will draw the Bij card, Klingon word for pain. So,
is it our birthday?
It is. It is. It's going to be a lot of fun.
To the journey!
That's the one thing we could take from Homecoming is, like, paragraph one, Chakotay and Seven break up. That's for real.
Yeah, they that shake happened. Hands and go, hey, it's been fun. It's been nice. Thanks for the picnic.
See ya.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
Fair At this enough. Point, like, they could say, yeah, why not? Star Wars crossover. I would essentially say, fine. Both franchises are dead. Let's just sew them together and see what happens.
Melodic Treks.
One of the most well thought out alien races that you only see in one episode.
Yeah, and the music is menacing without being over menacing, if that makes sense.
Axanar, the official podcast.
I think Justin Lin is a fascinating choice to direct because the Fast and the Furious movies, even though, they're action, adventure, road race movies, are really about a family.
The 602 Club.
That's really cool, though. I mean, I think that is a fantastic way to get to see just about any movie is kind of being able to watch it through a kid's eyes.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out these shows and get in on all of the daily Trek talk. You'll find us on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Windows Phone, Xbox, Zune, and you can also stream and download episodes directly from the website. So check it out. I just did that all from memory, so I'm very proud of myself right now.
Rock on, man. Rock on.
After you do it a thousand times, it just kind of comes naturally through osmosis.
Yes, it does. And be sure to leave us feedback on iTunes and stuff, because apparently that's good for getting other people to listen to the show and all that good stuff. Before we go, we'd like to ask that you support our sponsor, which is Audible.com. Audible is a great way for you to read all of the books you've always wanted to read but never thought you'd have the time for. Books like Star Trek, Voyager, Mosaic. That's the Janeway one, right? Yes, it
is.
Which is written by Jerry Taylor, narrated by Kate Mulgrew. We always bring it up because it's always, you know, it's always the thing to bring up, I guess.
Always relevant.
It's the Voyager Janeway book.
Yes. Yeah, we're going to keep on talking about it until you read it.
We're going to make it number one on the chart.
Read it, darn it, or listen to it. Come on. To the journey.
To the journey.
I want book reports.
That's
for you,
Max.
I want people to give us book reports on this.
It's the incredible life story of Captain Catherine Janeway, commander of the starship Voyager. It's read by Kate Mulgrew and enhanced with sound effects and an original score. And you can get it for free since you listen to Commentary, Trek Stars, and Trek FM. Just go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and you can sign up today for a free 30-day trial. And you get this book. And, you know, why not?
It's just free. Do it.
Just do it.
Live a little. Come on.
Yeah.
Use your ears.
Come on, people.
Yeah.
You can also support us by going to patreon.com, which is kind of like it's like a monthly Kickstarter thing, basically, right? And you know, your donation will help us do certain things that we want to do, like get an editor or better equipment or you know, all that other good stuff. And you can get rewards for doing that, like bonus content, which we need to make like desperately. We keep on promising
don't
that
pull
we'll
back
do
the
it
curtain,
but we'll
man.
Do it.
It's gonna happen.
Sometimes episodes get released earlier.
Don't pull back the curtain. It's gonna happen.
Sometimes episodes get released earlier. Yeah, not this one.
We're working on it. But we really do need help because that helps us, like, you know, produce and broadcast the episodes.
Very true. And the thing is, it would help us in such a way where we would have the lead time to produce that exclusive advanced content for
if
you.
If we had a full-time editor, man, that would be a dream.
Oh, I would cry tears of joy.
Wouldn't we all?
Yeah.
So, yeah, help us out. You know, go to patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm. And, you know, even a couple bucks would be greatly appreciated. All right. Well, I think that's everything. I'm hoping I'm not forgetting anything because I don't have the copy in front of me.
You did that all from memory?
Yes.
Nice.
I kind of stumbled over the Patreon thing, but, you know, whatever.
It's all good.
We made it through.
I couldn't tell.
So that's it for Kate Mulgrew. Now, Charlene, where can people find you?
Well, you can find me every Thursday with Tristan Riddell on To the Journey.
To the Journey. Sorry.
To the Journey.
Slackers.
I know. We're
John's busy drinking. I don't
hey,
know.
Hey,
what,
hey, hey. That man. Statement applies to so many situations. It has no
you
meaning
you thought you could
anymore.
Take a break on your own podcast, huh? No. That doesn't ever happen. You can find me there. You can find me occasionally co-hosting the Ready Room with Chris Jones whenever we're doing a Voyager episode especially. And I do believe that one is coming out fairly soon-ish if it hasn't already by the time this drops. So be on the lookout for that. We talk about live fast and prosper.
Ooh,
and then also
awesome.
You can find me on Twitter at @OhTheProfanity. Yes, it does contain profanity.
Excellent. What about you, John?
Well, you can find me on Twitter at Kessel Junkie, KESSELJUNKIE. And you can also find me after you're done listening to The Journey.
To the Journey.
Every Thursday, you can tune in to me on Words with Nerds, which is available through the usual channels with my buddy Craig.
Excellent. And you can find me right here on Trek FM doing Standard Orbit with Drew. And you can also find me on CommentaryTrackStars.com doing Commentary Track Stars Off Topic with Max and Brandon. And you can find me on Twitter at Mumbles3K. And you can find all of us on Twitter at ComTrackStars. And you can email all of us at ComTrackStars@gmail.com. Well, thanks again, Char. We really appreciate it. And I am looking forward to you guys coming back next week to discuss Kate Mulgrew's work in Orange is the New Black.